This is a conversation with Don Neagle. Mm-hmm. We are at WRUSAM in Russellville, Kentucky. It is February 16th, 2001. My name is Ethel White. Start with a little of your own background, please.
All right, I was born November 3rd, 1937 in Greene County, Kentucky. A little rural community actually called Exe. It's near Greensburg. I went to a one-room school with the general overall topic which we're discussing. It was totally, of course, in those days, totally segregated school. We knew African-American people in the community. They went to their churches. We went to ours. I do remember, however, that, and I told you this on the phone once, that my parents were what I consider today, in 2001, remarkably enlightened for their era. Not remarkably enlightened for 2001, but for 1947, 1946, 1948, because I was an only child, I never heard any derogatory remarks made about black people. I never was taught. I was completely dumbfounded later on to hear people talking about their presumed inferiority. I'd never heard that mentioned by my folks. And I remember as a youngster, a black man who lived next to near us helped my grandfather, I guess it was, cut tobacco. And I remember he ate at the dinner table with us when my grandmother prepared the dinner for the workers. And I noticed that there was some, I didn't know that there was anything unusual about it. I noticed later that there was some remarks or some eyebrow lifting about that, but and I don't know where my parents got their philosophies, other than that they both loved to read a lot. They both had eighth grade educations, but they enjoyed reading, and they read, I may have told you this, my father's cousin was owned the local newspaper, and he saved all the mass media publications for us to read. Look, Time, Collier's, American Magazine, all those, and we would read them. And it maybe it came from there. They both loved to read since they were children. Maybe that's where they got that. Maybe they had read about things in the wider world and how people thought about things.
How long did you stay in Greene County?
I stayed there till I was 17 years old. And then was in Campbellsville and Harrodsburg and Glasgow and different places, and wound up in Russellville. I was going to school at Western, and then I developed diphtheria and married for the first time. And at that time, was seeking a job, and I came to Logan County. I was hired to go to work here, and so I never went back and got my degree. I've been here ever since.
And what job did you get first?
I was on the air. I was a disc jockey. I was playing country music, and I was playing Elvis Presley and playing Perry Como and playing Doris Day and the Four Lads and all that good stuff.
And was when you say you came here in 1958. Was mm-hmm. that what you came here to do, a disc jockey?
And then later on started selling some advertising, writing advertising copy, and then later on started doing news, and things just evolved. And today, after 42 years, my young partner and I are buying the radio station. I don't think say someplace 42 years and you wind up getting to own it. I don't know there's any moral or philosophy behind that.
When the 1954 Brown versus Board of mm-hmm. Education decision came down, you would have still been
in
Greene County and
in high
school.
In high school.
Did you hear anything about it
We heard it talked about. At that time, it didn't affect us. I graduated in 55. There had been no change in the circumstances of the school at that time. And then later on, I remember I was at Western. I was out of school working for a while, out of high school, then went back to college. And I remember I went to Western in 50. I was there in late 56, fall of 56 and spring of 57. No, I'm sorry. The fall of 57 and spring of 58, I had one black young lady in one of my classes that time. That was all at that time. She was in a chemistry class. By the way, she did much better in that chemistry class than I did.
do you, and of course we'll focus on your time here, but does that mean that your memories, I mean, there sort of wasn't much in the way of talk or action in the areas where you were?
I never, before you came here to Logan County. Accepted this was something that was going to happen, and I don't recall any protests about it. I don't recall anybody being upset. Don't recall any Klan groups coming in or anything. It was pretty well, as I recall, accepted as this is the way it's going to be.
Okay. All right. Then you came here in 1958, and it took you, what, a few years to get into the news?
Right. I actually started doing news. As such, it was the late 60s, but I was an observer of what was going on. Early in the 60s, I remember a group of us would meet at the Catholic Church, I guess it was the Catholic Parish House, and black and white group, and talk about race relations. I don't know that we did anything particularly about it, but we would meet and talk.
And was this under the auspices of the church?
I don't know.
I think
it was just use of the building. I think the priest was very much a supporter, Father Gene Ryan, and there was a Presbyterian minister here too, Tom McGlashan, who also was interested in this. We would meet and talk. I don't know that some of my earlier memories of when I first came here. I remember there was a church, a black church group that met here in Russellville. This would have been like 59 or so. And I remember they were perturbed because there was really no place for them to stay. They had to stay in private homes. Not that we've ever been blessed with a great variety of hostelries anyway, but... And
this
I remember,
was a visit. Excuse me for interrupting you. This was a visiting group from outside.
This was some kind of convention. It's like a church convention.
Okay.
And I remember, if I'm not wrong, I think that Allison Dunnigan, who is from here, I think I remember her expressing displeasure that these people came in and weren't able to, weren't able to find mainstream lodging. And the like. You're familiar with who she mm-hmm. is, right? Mm-hmm. I think I remember that being. There also used to be the idea that if black groups came in here, I remember really early on, wanting to protest or demonstrate, that the black power structure here would discourage it and tell them to not do so. There was not much sympathy with one or two who, I guess, by their actions, they received favor from the white political powers that be, and a part of their job was to sort of keep down any discord. And I remember one instance in which I understood that some young people came in and probably wanted to do some kind of protesting of some kind, and they were told by one particular man who held great power and delivered vote of the black people, that get on out of here, we don't want you here. It was disturbing, I guess, his arrangement with the powers.
Now, why do you suppose what was the black power structure thinking? If they went along with the white power structure, which is what you're saying, what would they get out of this?
I'm thinking of one particular man I understood. If he delivered the black vote, they would overlook the fact that he ran a bootleg operation or something like that. This is all vague memory, my understanding of the situation at the time.
And what, if anything, at this time, this was before you were part of the news media, do you remember seeing anything about any, racial relations or desegregation in the press or on the radio or television? Was there any local commentary that you remember?
Early on, I don't remember. The person who did news for us at one time, I remember after calls from some of the black people protesting, he stopped designating, when there'd be an arrest, he would stop saying Joe Blow, Russellville Negro was arrested. He stopped doing that, I remember. That was one thing from, as far as there being any real coverage, any real support of integration efforts, I don't recall there being that.
Okay. So you don't recall commentary, say, on the black church group that had no place to stay, or anybody covering this black and white race relations group that you joined for a while?
Not as such, no. I don't recall any news coverage of it.
What happened with this race relations, this interracial race relations group? You said they talked a lot. Did anything ever come?
We met a lot. I don't recall anything other than we sort of get together and feel like a bunch of good liberals and that we were on the right side of history and feel pretty good about it, and we didn't really do anything, as I recall, frankly.
Who else knows? So you would have been maybe in your 20s.
Yeah, right.
What other white people were there? Do you remember?
I'm trying to remember. As I say, I think the Reverend McGlashan was there and Father Ryan. As far as there being, there were others there, but I'm drawing a blank.
I'm asking you to think back 40 years.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, right.
It's okay. Do you remember any local activity during the sit-ins in the other part of the country? This would be early 60s. Once again, you were not part of the media. Do you remember any of that coming here?
Any local activity as far as...
public accommodation stuff. That would have been early 60s.
I don't recall places. Anything going on. I do remember when the state public accommodations law was passed under the Breathitt administration, that I remember one particular merchant downtown said he thought that he should have the right to say who comes into his business, that he shouldn't have to admit just anybody. He should have that right. I remember that.
That was 1966, I think.
I know it was the mid-60s.
Okay.
I don't recall any instances of sit-ins or demonstrations or whatever in this town.
Do you have a sense that the the black vote was still being bought?
Well, I think for a long time it was. I think that there was an arrangement, an agreement at that time. Mm. And whether that went on and whether there was discouragement from, I don't know.
Okay.
This is all, I'm trying to get back into my gray matter and see what I do remember. Because I told someone one time, I'm a terrible one to notice a trend. You can, something has to knock me down before I notice it. I look back and say, oh yeah, this happened, but at the time I'm just, every day is every day.
Well, we should leap a little and I should ask you what you remember once you first started in the news business on radio. Do you remember a first incident that perhaps you either reported on or decided not to report on?
No, I remember I used to cover early on, they'd have NAACP meetings, they'd have a speaker here, and I would go and cover the meeting. I remember there was a minister from Louisville one time, I've forgotten his name, that spoke at a local NAACP meeting. I was the only white person there, and I sat at, they invited me to sit at the head table, and it was a dinner and a meeting, and he spoke very fervently about persecutions by white people for the past 400 years, and he would stop occasionally and look at me and say, I'm not talking about you, brother. It sort of threw his rhythm off a little bit, but that's one I remembered. I have not always done the right thing, but I think as far as race relations, I've tried to do the right thing. I'm not setting myself as some great example or anything, but I think, and of course our friend Al Smith was like that too. He and I talked about this a lot, and we we shared thoughts about this, and I don't know that that but you know, I'm not saying that I was this great pure, but I tried to do the right thing.
All right. Well, now, when you say that you and Al Smith talked about all this, do you mean at the time and when he was at the Russellville paper and you were here?
I think we did. And as far as what Al may have run in the paper, I don't know. He may have done commentaries. He may have done things. He may have written columns. He may have had editorials. I just don't recall now what. Of course, it would be a matter of researching the local papers to see, but I don't recall.
But do
I know where his sympathies were, and he very well could have done some things. We have never done editorials here at the station. The only thing that I could have done was try to be fair about what I reported in the presentations of it, and ever since I can remember, we've tried to, since I've been doing news, we've tried to be fair and give equal coverage to what the African-American folks were doing as well as what the others were doing, and they tried to be fair.
Have you made your own decisions? Or was there somebody else that decided where you would go?
Actually, from the very beginning, only a time or two were my judgments ever questioned, and I pretty well, as I recall, was able to determine where I went, what I did. It was pretty well left up to me, and there were only very rarely, and then usually I would argue my position with our general manager, and most times he would just say, okay, that's the way you feel about it, go ahead.
Well, do you remember anything about when the schools were desegregated here?
They were starting to be when I came here, and as I recall, I think what they did, they maybe would desegregate the, maybe. In fact, I have a tape here that if you want to take with you, I'll be glad to let you have. It's an interview with the Reverend George Allison, who's now deceased, who is a nephew of Alice Allison Dunnigan, who was in the first Russellville High School integrated senior class. And we talked about that and did the interview. I'm not sure I have the exact date. It's three or four years ago. And if you want to take that with you, if that's any help to you, I'll be glad to let you take that.
That'd be great.
But they were starting this. I think they started here in Russellville with the senior class. And then I don't know whether they worked back down that way or how they did. But I know that when I came, that Knob City School was still in operation. In fact, I guess it may have been that year or the next year after I came that they first integrated the Russellville schools.
Knob City was
the black school. It's now used for Head Start Center, Community Center type thing. It all was happening slowly. My daughter is 40. She'll be 41 in May, and she went all through the Russellville City Schools, and I'm sure that, you know, it was integrated all the way through there. She would have started in first grade, and she was born in 60, so what, 66? She was kindergarten 65. Matter of fact, her kindergarten class was integrated, as I recall. So at least by then, everything was integrated. I've forgotten the structure. I think they started a little along, maybe a class at a time or something like that.
Well, just for the sake of coordination, do you remember any highlights from that interview of the Reverend George Allison? Or do you remember any of his particular sort of feelings about?
He talked about that when the decision came down, and I've forgotten.
The Brown decision?
Yeah, Brown versus Board of Education.
54.
And that, but they didn't, this was later on, and I'm thinking probably this may have been 56, I'm not sure, that graduating class. Because he was in the same class with my friend Jerry White, who owns a pharmacy here, and we've talked about that. He talked about something that's very interesting, because the coach then, or maybe it was the principal, I've forgotten which, they came to see and talk to some of these guys because they were very interested in getting them on the football team. Remember that? So that may have eased the transition there somewhat.
So there was a choice. I mean, the black kids didn't have to go to the white school.
Well, if there was a choice, there wasn't a choice very long, okay. Obviously. And maybe all that were going to be in the senior class did go. But he was coming and talking to them about the ones who were going to play football, I guess that's what it was. I remember there was a young man named George Hill here who was an outstanding student, outstanding athlete, and he moved away and became a doctor. I've lost track, and I never really knew him, but people did. And they asked him one time if he would, why he didn't come back here instead of his practice. He said, well, you know, the social life, there was none. I remember a young...
Let me just back you up. George Hill was a black student athlete.
Black student, right.
And when he says no social life, did he mean integrated social life?
Yeah, well, I think he meant that
go ahead.
That, first of all, where he'd have to live, the segregated life, this was years ago, the segregated places he'd have to live, and nobody else of his particular intellectual or financial, you know, the same type of people would be here. Because this is one thing, and I've said this before, we have suffered terribly here by not having a sizable black middle class. We just don't have enough of it. So many of the promising young folks go off somewhere, and we just don't have we've never had a sizable black middle class here. I remember a young, there used to be the county agents, the county agricultural agents, you'd have one for the white farmers, you'd have one for the black farmers. What they used to call the home demonstration agents, now there's another name, but there would be those for the white ladies and others for the black ladies. And I remember a young guy named James Harden, and I remember knowing him and his wife, and I think he lived in Bowling Green, I believe. And I remember when my daughter was a little bitty girl that my first wife and my daughter and I went to Bowling Green to visit him and his wife and his daughter, or his little boy maybe. And I remember looking out the window and seeing my daughter, who was a little white girl, walking down playing, you know, like with his little black boy. And I thought, well, some folks, you know, probably just had a hissy fit over that. Then he later moved away. I don't know whatever happened to them, but I remember visiting them. I don't know if they ever came to visit us. I don't remember that, whether they did or not. I mean, these are all just, you know, sort of images out of nowhere.
No, that's fine. Images out of nowhere is great. Do you remember any issues over housing?
No, I remember. I'm sure there have been, and I'm sure that bright young black people have felt that they were not able to buy homes. I live to this day in a segregated subdivision. I have no problem but it's that way. To my knowledge, there's no black family that lives in the subdivision where I live. It's one of the subdivision came into existence in the 60s, and there are no blacks live there now. So often they have felt they had to go out in the country. I mean, for instance, you have a couple here, Clarence and Marie Gamble, and he's been a school administrator for years, and she's a counselor for mental health. So they have a farm. They live out in the country. It was simpler for them to, if they want to have a nice home, they buy a piece of property out in the country and build it. There's a same situation, I think, with another young couple, a lady who was in management in a local industry, and her husband, I've forgotten what he does, they're fine people, but they live in the country. It's always been a simpler thing, less hassles, I guess. Now, I know that there's one, I think there's one black family that lives in one of the other quote-unquote white subdivisions here. I don't recall hearing anybody complaining about that, but it's, Sunday is still segregated. Now, my church, pastor at my church and the pastor of the Mount Zion Baptist swap pulpits from time to time.
What is your church?
It's a Baptist church. It's a country Baptist church. Swap pulpits, but it's still, totally.
This is black and white congregations?
Mm-hmm, yeah. There are some, there may be a handful, maybe a congregation or two, I think maybe what they call Hillview Heights Church, I think has some black and white members, but your old line churches, traditional churches, there may be some that go to the Presbyterian church here, I don't know. But almost, 99% is totally segregated. And of course people say, well, black people have their style of worship, white people have their style of worship, and nobody's happy, nobody's comfortable. You know.
Did you ever, during the, say, 60s and 70s, did you cover any political, you know, city council meetings or like that? What is your memory about how the political leaders were, other than buying the black votes?
The Russellville City Council, the first council, city councilman, was a man named Harvey Smith, who was a building contractor. And
When you say first councilman?
First black councilman.
Black councilman, mm-hmm. Okay.
And he was pretty much old school, considered to be one that wouldn't rock the boat, as I recall, and kind of a, you know, hesitate to use the word token, but I think that may have been.
When roughly, I mean, we're talking 70s
no,
or
the
60s?
No, the 60s, that would have been in the late 60s. I remember when the city hired the first black policeman, Jerry English, and that was considered to be quite a step up.
Same era?
Yeah. I think there has been one member, black member of Logan Fiscal Court, I think, unless I'm mistaken. And that was Charles Neblett, who was a civil rights, are you familiar with, you know who Charles Neblett is? He was one of those who did the Freedom Rides and belonged to SNCC and was a member of the Freedom Singers and they, you know, the Smithsonian sometime back, you know, they you know who he is. He was, it was a situation in which I think there were like three candidates and the two whites divide up the white vote and he got elected. He never got reelected. But he blended in rather well. There was one particular old-line white fiscal court member they said would have problems, you know, he wouldn't accept this. And he and Charles got along better than any of the two. They seemed to respect each other. And there was Dr. R.L. Yokley, I think, was the first black member of the Russellville School Board. And, of course, he was an economics professor at Western for a number of years and co-author of a book on the black church. I remember back in the 60s, I did an interview. I wish I had it. You know, some things I wish I don't know what I did with, but I did an interview with him on the nature of the black church. He and another guy had co-written a book on that. He's still alive. His wife died recently, or a year or two ago. He's in his 80s now. If there's ever, I don't know if there's ever been a black member of the Logan County School Board. I don't recall it. If there has, there could have been. I don't recall.
Did you cover any of these meetings?
Oh yeah, I covered a lot of them. Yeah, over the years, in the 70s and through the 80s, I was going to all of them.
Does anything loom large in your memory? I mean, were there any divisions or intense debates or big troubles that were aired in any way, or was it all pretty quiet?
I don't recall anything major. There may have been something, but I don't remember anything particularly significant. A humorous thing I might tell you, I remember back in the, about 66, we were getting our library district organized to build a new library and by petition, and I was given a number of places to go speak, and a lady and I went to the AME Zion Church, and we were told that day there was going to be a demonstration there that night. And I thought, well, this will be interesting to see. But it turned out to be a waterless cookware demonstration. So, you know, so we had a combination religious service, waterless cookware demonstration, and petition signing. Got 90-some-odd signatures on the petition that night. And we did get the library district established and the new library.
Do you remember any, this all sounds really quite peaceful.
Yeah, I don't recall.
Or at least quiet.
Yeah, quiet, at least peaceful, at least under the, kept quiet. I don't recall, unless I'm just having total mental blanks, which I probably am, but I don't recall any major blow-ups of any kind. Did Turner remember anything? If so, maybe you can jog my memory. Do you remember anything like that?
Well, I probably shouldn't color your thinking, but my impression of the area is quiet.
Yeah.
And
What I haven't figured out yet is what was going on, if anything, beneath the quiet. Mm-hmm. Maybe nothing. You are giving me the impression, and I shouldn't draw a conclusion, you're giving me the impression that there was some unhappiness, but that it didn't really surface.
I don't think it did. I'm sure there was, but I don't recall it surfacing.
Do you remember any other interviews, either of black people in the area or of anybody on the subject of race relations or civil rights?
Of course, you know, I have, over the last several years, have done a number, but now whether they were...
You mean recent years?
Yeah, recent years, you know. But I don't recall... I've done a number with Neblett about his experiences in the South, and Dr. Marion Lucas from Western on his book on history of blacks in Kentucky, and you know, a number of ones, Dr. John E. Long at Western, and his, you know, as the leader.
Okay. I did a series of programs in the 60s on religion, different churches. I was going through my agnostic period about that time, and did a whole lot of interviews with different ministers, and I remember black ministers. I did interviews, but it was on religion. It's not on civil rights as such. I did with a Baptist minister here, and the Reverend Dunlap, the Methodist minister, and different ones about the beliefs of their church. I don't remember anything specifically about their feelings about the civil rights.
Okay, so religious beliefs were not, at least for purposes of the interviews,
how come do you baptize babies and you folks don't, you know, that type of thing. real profound theology there, you know, you can imagine.
Does anything, and I know I'm asking you to remember a long way back, does anything stick out in your mind, say, on the interview with Dr. Lucas about the history of blacks in Kentucky? I mean, anything sort of loom large, or was it?
No, just talked about, that was the last 4 or 5 years.
Did you ever do any call-in shows on the subject?
Not until, we didn't start a call-in show until 84, so it's just been fairly recent to do this. Mm-hmm. Doing it every day, 5 days a week now, but, and of course we've done many on it since then, but, you know, it's not the same. You do it now, and so what? Mm-hmm. But doing one in 1962 would have been a different thing altogether.
Has anything surfaced in your recent programs about feelings back then? Or is it mostly about what's going on now?
I'm trying to think if we have talked about, if I have talked mainly to, it seems that mainly I have talked to people about what's going on now. Mm-hmm. Of course, I talked to Neblett about what he did in the South. He wasn't here then. Mm-hmm. I don't recall anything I know, even though I was naive and thought everything was happy, I know in retrospect, mm-hmm. there had to be these resentments and these feelings and all, but at that time I was sort of oblivious to it.
Well, and you're painting the picture of a town or a county that did appear to be.
I remember Mr. Alec Kimbrough, a black man. I remember when he was named, he was the first black man to ever be on a Logan County grand jury. Mm-hmm. I remember that, and he was, and as a matter of fact, the local paper did do a story on that. I remember that he was the first black ever on the grand jury. Mm-hmm.
And when these kinds of appointments, elections happened, you don't remember any protests or
I don't remember. There may have been those, you know, quietly that all while, you know, just totally out of hand. I don't recall any public protest. Mm-hmm. There was sort of a general petting one. Look how broad minded we are, that type of thing. You know, look what a good thing, look how great we are doing this.
Do you remember any fallout here from either, I mean, 1968 was, of course, the year when the cities were burning and
I remember
the assassinations
being at Houchin's Market one night, and this older white lady I knew said, she said, that Martin Luther King's been killed. It's a good thing. She I remember hearing that.
The black community here didn't pick up on any of that. Any of the school desegregation, the busing, of course you didn't have busing here. So the busing controversy in Louisville would not have carried over here.
No, only thing that happened with busing, people were happy to see the people in the South were happy to see on TV the folks in South Boston screaming and looking as mean as the folks in Mississippi had. This thing isn't just restricted to the South. They were very satisfied to see that. No, I don't recall any, something flipped through my brain a moment ago, but it's gone now. I remember being a lady, Miss Jetty Benton, owned a nursing home here for older black people. And I remember being in her home when there was some advertising, I guess, for me. And I remember being in her home to get the advertising, and I saw a picture of Martin Luther King on the wall. And at that time, I was, somewhere in the early mid-60s, I was kind of surprised. I didn't know black people here really thought, I didn't know if they really were that, liked Martin Luther King that much. And I found out later on, they all did. They were all inspired by him. They didn't, maybe it wasn't good to talk about.
Well,
they're such a minority. See, we've got, 10% blacks in Russellville. If they wanted to do something, what could they have done? I mean, they're such a minority. It's not like in Mississippi, where some of these counties are 75% black. And I don't know I've forgotten what the black population of the county is. But there aren't that many black folks that live out in the county anymore because farmers now, with mechanized farming, don't need all the black farmhands they used to have, and many of them came to town, and they're only 10 to 15%, something like that here. So they never had a real power base in numbers, really.
Well,
so it's always having to go along to get along.
And yet, from what you say, there was no great protest on the part of the whites when blacks were entering the white
house. I don't recall it. Now, I heard a story told that there was one guy who ran a grocery store here that he said he was going to cause some trouble down there. But I understand also that some of the others, other white leaders, put the pressure on him to shut up and stay out and stay away. He's not going to cause trouble. I think they had, maybe they were aware of what had been seen to be going on in other places. And I don't know whether they were aware that it's a bad thing as far as, we were going through a big industry recruiting time through there. Whether some of the leaders thought this is bad publicity, I don't know that. I really hadn't thought much about it. That may have figured in their minds, too, because the late 50s is when Rockwell came here, Emerson Electric came here, other plants started coming from. And we got exposed to northern people. If you use the term, you know what I mean. We got used to people who had, even before I came here, people who had came from the north, had different accents. They were Catholics or Lutherans or whatever, and not all Southern Baptists from out in the country. We sort of got exposed to people who had different ways of looking at things. They soon blended in, became presidents of the Kiwanis Club and the Rotary Club and the Chamber of Commerce and so on. So it may have a little different perspective. Industry will do that for you. But
well, then you answered the question that I didn't even have to ask, which was to try to get some sense of the reasons for all this, because there are places in other parts of Kentucky, like Clay County, Sturgis, mm-hmm. where there was
a
certain amount of trouble. Yeah. And
I don't know. I've always In this old county, there's always been a little element of gentility, I think. It had two colleges years ago. They both had to close. I know one lasted until the Depression. It was a male college for males. It was Bethel College, and there was a Logan female college. And some of the older families like to flatter themselves that, these are old, fine old Virginia families that came here, fine old North Carolina families, and they don't do cruddy, trashy things. They're not rednecks, and therefore they dealt with this stuff on a pretty high level. So, whether that be the case or not. I'm not one of those old families. My folks scrambled down from New Haven, Connecticut, and New Jersey back in the 1700s and wound up in Kentucky. So I'm not one of the old Southern families. So my folks fought for the Union.
Well, I know we agreed that you have to be on the air in about 5 minutes, mm-hmm. So
well,
I guess it's time
this.
To wind it up.
I will
up,
give you this tape, and you take it with you. And if you will, when you get finished with it, if you'll mail it back to me, I'll get it for you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.